being involved earlier. I wasn't, even though the current practice might be such that that wouldn't automatically happen. I like that idea. I like the idea of having this review body in that chain of responses at the draft stage, or maybe even earlier.
But we don't publicize, the auditor doesn't publicize the audit until it's actually published at the draft stage.
Right.
The draft stage isn't published.
So that's why I say I don't think this is either or. And I mean, I had a note about this language, and I've been out of commission the last few days, and so I didn't get a chance to take a look at this and convey to my colleagues here that, well, this wasn't quite what. But I think it has surfaced two different, like I say, not mutually exclusive ideas. And I think I'm going to suggest that we bring this back and kind of specifically say there's two ways this could play out that are not mutually exclusive. And, you know, in general, your question about, like, what needs to be done, I don't know that we started worrying a whole lot about how, how the translation of this is going to occur, and that's really a good example of, like, that starts to get into what's your job.
No, that's right. And in effect, we did not expect you to sweat all those implementation questions, but in some cases it's going to color how the recommendation turns into practice.
But that's why when I, you know, in my introductory comments in terms of what I learned, I mean, I think part of the value of this document is it's really trying to think about those ways that potentially will never be, you know, nobody's going to be able to figure out how to codify it in some sort of, it's going to become a new practice.
Right.
Still measurable, you know, 3 years from now, is the mayor still putting one person in charge of both bureaus? So I think this also highlights that some of these recommendations may not be implementable in the form of, you know, we're going to write this ordinance differently or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think first we have to, sorry, Mr.
The thing to keep in mind here is what's the underlying principle? And the underlying principle, and we've tried to do this in several places, is meaningful participation, because we're asking a lot of the people who serve on this, and we want to make sure their voices are heard and there's adequate opportunity for input at appropriate times. So I don't think we're going to figure out the exact mechanism, but it's the principle that needs to be respected. And if there's an administrative maneuver that has to be done to respect the principle, then I would think that's where we need to look to you to help figure it out.
And here's an example that I think this discussion, I think, is prompting. We could, for example, ask, number one, we could disclose to the body that the auditor has put us on a schedule for an audit. So the body would know that there's a pending audit. Number two is we could ask the auditor to early on in the scoping process send the auditor assigned to this audit to come meet with the pub and scope the audit. And the auditor assigned then does a lot of interviews and does a lot of fact-finding. We could be prescriptive in saying, would you spend some time with the body having a discussion with them about the scope of the audit? Those are all things I think that we could consider in the spirit of what you're suggesting.
Exactly. Yeah, thank you. I, like the mayor, liked the idea of the pub being involved early in the audit process, and which Commissioner Fish just suggested I think could work. But I do particularly like the idea of when the draft audit comes in, if it could come not just the commissioner in charge, but to the pub, because that's a pretty significant part of the audit process. The auditor says, well, here's what I'm going to say. What do you have to say? And there's a back and forth. And if the pub is as engaged in the process overall as we're expecting them that they would be, it seems to me preferable that they be involved in that process as well.
But the draft audit is not a public document. So that's, I think that, I mean, obviously you're going to need to talk to the auditor about that, whether that's even possible, whether it's desirable. I do not support having a draft document, which by definition is not necessarily accurate even. That's part of why you bring it to the commissioner in charge, is to say, well, yeah, yes, and you missed this bit. Whereas, you know, we all know what happens when you get to that in the press. Nobody ever goes back to read the second article about what was actually true. So I think we should be talking today, especially about whether things are a good proposal. And with your permission, I'd like to move to the suggestion of having both utilities under a single commissioner. I think that's a terrible proposal, and for three reasons. First of all, the voters already changed the charter. It used to be that way. There is still in the charter a commissioner of public utilities, and the voters decided that we didn't want to have specific particular portfolios. The second reason is that I am the commissioner of public utilities, and I am tired of getting applications for pipe fittings and other such things in my mailbox. It was a suggestion at the last Charter Review Commission that we take away the titles and simply call them seats 1, 2, 3, and 4. That wasn't done. So I think it would be even more confusing, and in fact in some ways is more confusing now that we do have a Commissioner of Public Utilities and that's not his title. Third of all, the amount of political kissing up that would happen if that were institutionalized to please not be the commissioner in charge of public utilities would be unseemly.
Are you volunteering? I'm
just no, I am absolutely not. But I did, when asked by the mayor which bureaus I would like early in his tenure, I said that I would be interested in having environmental services. I would never have suggested that had I thought that I would have either both utilities or neither of them. Because they're very difficult bureaus. They're huge bureaus. They're a huge part of the budget. I do think that I'm still a fan of the commission form of government. I think that having a commissioner in charge who's going to dig way into the weeds of all of the issues in the bureaus is a good thing. Having two enormous bureaus is only superhero Mr. Commissioner Fish is able to manage it, but it's really a daunting task. And particularly when politicians are getting ready to run for re-election, it's not a fancy bureau, and you don't get many kudos for saying, I'm only going to go for a 5% rate increase. When you then have to battle a water bureau ballot measure at the same time, that is just, it's not fair. And I think that for those reasons, it doesn't work well within our commission form of government. And I think that if the voters want to change the charter and have a city manager and a mayor who's able to direct things much more, it's working right well right now because of Mayor Hales and Commissioner Fish being able to work on things like this Blue Ribbon Commission. Structurally, I think it's not the better way to go.
Mr. Chairman, I do want to clear the air on one thing, and I owe my friend and colleague an apology. Knowing her reputation for being a prodigious worker and for responding to every email that comes her way, we may have on occasion forwarded some of the water and sewer emails to her for a response. And I just want to publicly apologize, but thank you for answering each and every one of them as effectively as you have.
Let me probe into another item on the list here, or in the chart. It's actually the last one on the list. It's a small item, but I'm curious about it, and that is your recommendation to assign the solid waste piece to the Planning and Sustainability Commission. I understand the Planning and Sustainability Bureau staffs that function, but we have at least one member of that commission in the room. It's a fairly busy commission to start with, and they haven't done rate review heretofore. So I'm curious about that recommendation.
Mayor Hales, we had staff from the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability come and speak with us about this specifically. And they portrayed the garbage rates, if you will, as an entirely different animal than rates for the water, sewer, and wastewater utilities. Staff, at least, indicated that that would be an acceptable responsibility for the Bureau and the Commission. We did not meet with the Commission itself on this and have had no direct contact with them.
But I think it's important to add that the authority to set the solid waste rates being vested in the PURB is a accident of history from when there was a bureau that had both stormwater and solid waste. Yeah. I don't remember what it was called.
Yeah.
Bureau of Sanitary Engineering.
Thank you, Bill. The Bureau of Sanitary Engineering. and so we saw that as a rationalization of the process that it was an archaic rather than modernizing.
Yeah, another historical point seemed to be, that when this assignment was given to the PURB, it was when there was a lot more brouhaha going on with the city changing to its current franchise system. And so it was a period of turmoil. It's like, oh, we got to, make sure there's some spots. I think that's another element of the history that it's really a different rate setting process than for traditional utility. So that's the background, more background.
Mr. Chairman, you have a recommendation that there be a review of this process in a number of years out. So I have two questions for you.
No.
Very Sherman-esque. Two questions. What are the measures of success? So what would we be judging, number one? And number two, who would do it? And obviously, there'd be a number of options. We could ask, we could reconvene this body and ask for you to do that role. I think the chairman has already stated a preference on that. We could ask PSU, that does 360s for us on certain things, to come in and do an assessment. We could do an outside consultant. But so just, could you share your thoughts with us on what are the measures of success and who might we look to do the evaluation?
We have articulated a handful of measures of success towards the end of the report on page 20. One would be that the public better understands the water and sewer systems and the rationale for projects and capital expenses and the basis for rates they're paying. Second, that the community trusts that their interests and those of future generations are the primary considerations in determining services and capital expenditure. Third, that interested Portlanders feel they have enough information and the opportunity to genuinely participate in city decisions related to the financial operation of the bureaus. Fourth, that there are qualified and excellent volunteers who are willing to and do participate and serve on the pub. Fifth, that the mayor and city council institute new standards of practice. It says norms. I think we mean to be standards of practice that integrate the pub into the budget deliberations in a timely and meaningful manner so that you've taken up our invitation to treat the pub as a partner in the budget process as opposed to an early input that is then moved beyond. And finally, that there is public involvement in the utility financial decision making that is consistent, constructive, and timely. These are the 6 factors we've identified, but we've also kind of been continuing that conversation. Just last night, Brian Stahl had some further thoughts on that, which he'd shared. Oh, and your second question is to who should do it. I think you've identified the realm of groups that we talked about, whether it was PSU or to reassemble this group or some components of it, I think you'd find willing participants at the table to sit back and review. And, the way Brian articulated it in an email or maybe it was a phone conversation with me recently was, we're taking significant steps here. They're not as significant as some would want. They're more significant that others would want. The right way to do this is not to go all the way or go none of the way, but to go part of the way and be ready to evaluate it seriously in a timely fashion, probably more like 2 years rather than 5, but somewhere in between, to make adjustments as necessary if we haven't gotten where we need to get.
Thank you. And also, Dwight, you talked in your comments about a commitment to innovation, and you also, in the report, tip your hat to a legacy at both bureaus of environmental stewardship and innovation in things like green infrastructure. That raises an interesting question because it's, I think, been settled by this council and largely in our community that green infrastructure is part of the core mission of, let's say, the Bureau of Environmental Services for two reasons. One is because the charter authorizes it, and B, because it's a cost-effective way of addressing a core mission. In fact, one of the things we now do at Council is we present both sides of the ledger. We start with the fact that it saves money, and then we identify some of the environmental benefits. But we think saving money needs to be in the mix to show people that if we have a blend of gray and green, it's less expensive to ratepayers than just the old pipe approach. But more broadly, you're quite clear in the report about the benefits of green infrastructure. Council has been consistent in supporting it. How do we avoid a situation where we set up an independent body and then start arguing over first principles around things like that, rather than how to invest, whether we should invest, and those kinds of questions?
Our recommendations embrace both green infrastructure and the broader watershed approach to problem solving that the bureaus have undertaken as reflective of local values as well as of federal and state mandates. I think that your charter to the group as you set them up our recommendations would support a charge to that that includes that as part of their oversight mission and their accountability and transparency mission. The needle we have been working to thread is to ensure sufficient independence to have professional and well thought out expertise based and community value based insight and oversight from the board while maintaining political accountability. Respectfully, the five of you are the only ones we can fire as voters and ratepayers. And so taking you out of the, removing you too far from any process or decision making is a significant mistake. I think that's an opinion shared by all of my colleagues, and I'll ask you to tell me if I'm wrong, but we've had that conversation a number of times. So we would, it would be a terrible mistake to mischaracterize what we have recommended as or to understand what we have recommended as something that would set up a kind of board that could kind of disregard that important political accountability, an act of its own in a way that's contrary to those political values and political accountability, which are at the heart of a successful democracy.
I've got a question about the measures of success to the extent that they seem fairly dependent on public opinion research. I mean, for example, the public better understands the water and sewer system, the rationale for projects and capital expenses, and the basis for the rates they're paying. What if a significant segment of the public just doesn't have the time or the interest in learning a lot about those things? I'll give you an example. I know nothing about cars. I drive a car, but even if the auto industry set as a goal, Americans should know a lot more about cars, I would just refuse to learn. Either it works or it doesn't. We can try to give better information, but that doesn't mean that people will take lots of time out of their day to learn it. And also, giving better information is partly dependent on the media, and who knows what the media will do.
As I read this piece of it aloud, I struggled with the way it's written because it makes it look like we're putting an onus on the public, and that's not right. The onus needs to be put on the bureaus and the oversight authority working with all the other players to ensure that we're doing a better job of educating people. I think, and others can jump in if I'm wrong, this is intended to measure whether or not the bureaus are doing a better job of explaining what they're doing so that people people are not misled and not misunderstood, and the responsibility is with the bureaus and oversight authority and City Hall, frankly, and the commission, the council, that is, to undertake that, not on the people. So we'll reword that accordingly.
Well, but, I mean, it strikes me as possible that even if we did a better job, that there's just a limit to how much information people can absorb on any topic they don't have to absorb.
I agree with that. So the standard of success is not meant to be that every person understands it better, right? The standard is... Do most people understand that they have two water bills in one, something that a lot of people don't know, right?
Well, I would just say that having had a lot of experience with communicating to people who don't use the communication, that it doesn't negate the responsibility to communicate. And that underlying one thing that we did find was that there is an adequate communication about the value of what people pay in terms of rates for what they receive. And this gets to, I think, a fundamental issue, not only with this bureau, but across government, that there isn't a high level of trust in government. It seems to me that given the innovation that's gone on and given some of the successes, that this is an opportunity to communicate in a way that can elevate trust in government and that can also address some of the problems when you have independent events or just events that happen, like the Waterhouse, for example, that cues everybody. So now all you have to say is the Waterhouse, and it's a sign of mistrust of government and problems in a particular bureau. There's a real responsibility to not let that happen, to not let the specific event color the entire view of government. So to me, these things are extremely important because it's about restoring the idea that there is value in what we pay for water here.
But actually, one thing you said leads me to a second question, which is we know that people's views about any individual government are colored by their views in government about government in general, which in turn are colored by overarching things like the economy. Like recently, the auditor said that trust in Portland city government is lower than it's been in God knows how many years. And I feel bad about that. It's also true that trust in government in general in America is at its lowest point since, you know, 1922 or something. So I think it might be difficult to create public opinion-based metrics that are sort of adjusted for context. And actually, maybe the idea would be to come up with very specific things, like Chair Holton just said. I mean, having people understand that their bill is both their water and sewer bill, I mean, that might be one, like, specific thing we actually could achieve.
If I can just add a point on that, what I think this invites is an interactive discussion with this body about steps we can take every year to improve communication. So, for example, we know that a lot of people are surprised to learn that the bill they get is a combined water, sewer, stormwater bill. That a lot of people are surprised to learn that water is the bargain part of their bill, that water is about a third of their bill, sewer stormwater is two-thirds. A lot of people during the campaign were surprised to learn that the big pipe was a big driver of rate increases, and yet we're somewhat ahead of the curve in other cities like Atlanta and others that are going to have to do these CSOs are going to see a big spike in their rates, and on and on. So I think being challenged to find a better and clearer ways of communicating that message, and we can do it in a lot of ways. One thing the mayor and I feel very strongly about is moving to monthly bills. I think one of the things that creates enormous confusion with our ratepayers is a quarterly bill. If I got a quarterly bill from Comcast, I'd have an attorney on retainer. I mean, so, but when you shift, and it doesn't give you a fair assessment of the value you're receiving, and we forget that it's a quarterly bill. It just shows up and it's a big number. So that's why we're trying to streamline the process of getting to monthly billing. Yeah. With monthly billing, particularly when we do e-billing, which, you know, meets our values because it's paperless, we actually are going to have some additional options in terms of how we present information. Information is presented more clearly, maybe more strategically, so our customers understand the value that they're getting or what the service they're getting. So I view it as helping to set some aspirational goals annually. And I think Steve points out that it probably has inherent limitations as a metric when we come back and evaluate the overall success of the program.
Well, and it changes over time. When I ran in 2005, my then teenage son said, "Mom, don't talk about stormwater. Nobody cares." And when I ran in 2012, it turns out that people actually, a lot of more folks actually do understand that stormwater is part of the big pipe and that people do care about it. We have a particular set of folks who come in testifying at council who don't seem to understand that stormwater is a legitimate part of environmental services, despite the amount of education that has been done over the years. So, you know, some of that learning is a 20-year process, not a 1 or 2 year process. I would encourage you to put in the report, in the findings, a requirement for an annual report to council. I liked the concept of the work sessions and such, but and the having the annual report requirement means that it gets on the council calendar when more folks might be watching it. It's documented, and I find that really helpful.
I will rarely say this, but I will commend to you a recent Dr. No column from the Willamette Week, which addressed the quarterly bill, and it was hysterical.
Can I ask quick follow-up question? I mean, I like that idea. What would the council do with that annual report?
Well, it's, let me be blunt about it. It's one of those fail to read it at your peril moments. That is, it's like an audit. You know, those get public attention as well as our attention. Mm-hmm. And there's a virtuous circle there. The more of public attention it gets, the more we have to pay attention to it. So I think that's a very valuable suggestion.
Well, and particularly, it's my suggestion is that it's not a report at budget time, because at budget time, there's a lot of, and as Chair Holton said, the decisions have been made by there. The opportunity that other commissioners have when a report comes to council, we can say, oh, by the way, I notice, I mean, this actually happened in the previous my previous term, it came up during the budget that, oh, by the way, the water rates are going up by $1 billion because we're going to do a filtration plant in the Bull Run watershed. Mm-hmm. Right. And I said, okay, well, I'm going to approve these rates for right now, but you need to come back and we're going to have a discussion about that specific item. Otherwise, in the commission form of government, there isn't an opportunity for other council members to weigh in and say, excuse me, that's a policy choice that I think we all deserve to have a say in.
Thanks. That's kind of what I assumed I wanted to get it. I mean, you know, because, you know, I'm on the Blue Ribbon Commission. I'll be continuing with my Cub hat on. And so it's like, I particularly want to know what you think. So thank you for.
You know, one other thing we might want to consider is somewhere between the Cub and the Pub is having a more regular and scientific feedback loop from our customers. I mean, We serve over 900,000 people in the region, we look at survey data, but it's often data done by companies or entities unrelated to us. So, for example, the Davis-Hibbetts survey work recently that came out and said, number one, don't use the word green infrastructure. It doesn't mean anything to people. Number two, people put quality, value, and reliability ahead of price. Price is fourth in line. But they're looking at quality, value, reliability. They also, a question that goes to something Steve mentioned, they found that the general understanding of the system was pretty low, but that people, their most important value was they want to be able to turn the faucet on and get reliable, quality water. And as long as that happened, you know, people were generally fine. So having a better understanding, I noted that during the campaign, when a certain newspaper ran a list of potential savings, one of our most vocal critics put in as one of the savings, delaying work on resiliency in our pipes. Well, that's an issue that I think turns almost exclusively on which side of the river you live on. I think for those living on the west side and getting services, including some of our wholesale customers, the prospect of our pipes failing in a seismic event is pretty scary. To the east side, for those of us who have our water delivered by gravity, and not dependent on getting across a river, we might have a different view. I'm not sure that, I mean, it'd be interesting to see how does the public view resilience as one of the guideposts in our CIP investment list. But we might want to think about doing on a reasonable interval, some survey work with our customers to make sure we understood priorities and values and use that to guide our work along with our advisory bodies.
A comment and a question. Comment is just on representation of the pub. I think it would be nice to have somebody with public health expertise in it, given these two bureaus. Question is, did you look at how the PUC works? And do you think there's any lessons to be drawn from looking at how the PUC operates for this kind of body?
We're looking at our two utilities experts, one who deals regularly with the PUC. Chris, do you want to take that or Janice?
Why don't you start?
Okay, sure. So one of the things, and I think Janice would probably go here almost right away, is we had considered requiring the five of you, whether or not you all agree with the approved budget, to actually put in writing your thoughts. So you heard Christine talk about the chalk line for the budget, and there's going to be a question coming up about that. But to answer your question, so by comparison to the chalk line, if there were any changes, we would have required a lot of you to put down in writing what your specific thoughts are and why you made you made changes so that it's on the public record. That has since evolved into what are now sort of three injection points for this oversight entity into the process. I think that's about as the extent of the comparison that I think we can make. Maybe you have more.
Yeah, I was one who kind of tossed out like the written response in terms of trying to, have something be tangible. But it was always kind of a metaphor. It's like looking to have that be a springboard, and I feel good about how it has evolved. One, I think through the process with help from Andrew Scott, there's, written documentation of various things. The hearings have a written record. So those are all, I think, akin to, what's happening at the PUC and reflect that and kind of hit the sweet spot with reflecting the similarities, but there's pretty significant differences. And so I think it's kind of pulling the right lessons from the PUC without going overboard because, their whole written record process, becomes this whole big ball of wax, which I don't think is really applicable here.
I apologize. I should have started by explaining that I don't really know very much about how the PUC operates. You shouldn't have assumed any knowledge on my part. I mean, can you outline like what some of the similarities are and some of the differences?
How much time do you have?
Steve, just remember, it's like a car.
That's right. You don't want to know. I mean, honestly, it's a very legal process. It involves significant written testimony, supporting documentation. There are rounds of those, and ultimately it concludes with a commission order in written form that addresses any outstanding issues. Often the parties in the meantime have negotiated stipulations. Of course, I presume that the Oregon Public Utility Commission would prefer not to have to rule on every little thing, and so oftentimes utilities and CUB and ICNU and others are trying to get to a reasonable outcome in the meantime. I think we've already touched on where the similarities are.
So one of the other issues that we had wanted to surface and that that Chris had mentioned, one of the challenges one of the needles we tried to thread was the question of ensuring that there was significant involvement by this group in the development of the budget at all important stages so that they could really, we use the term partner repeatedly in the report. They're really a partner of you as well as the commissioner in charge and the bureaus in the development of the budget, while at the same time sustaining and maintaining the ownership of the budget with the commissioner in charge, both as a feature of the commissioner form of government, but also because injecting that political accountability at the early stage of the development of the budget is incredibly important. The example we talked about in the room was Commissioner Fish's decision, I think last budget go around, to set a target for a reduction on operating cost side for both bureaus. That's the kind of leadership and accountability driven leadership that we think is important to retain. So striking that balance between the input and role for the commission and for the pub, I should say, and the importance of the ownership of the commissioner in charge has been something we've been trying to get right. And our resolution kind of calls for, as Chris indicated, three specific interactions and structured interactions with the budget, including one, development at the early stage, two, work session with the mayor and council when it's at the mayor's budget stage, and three, right before you adopt the budget, a face-to-face session where the pub, staffed by its independent staff, can help surface any differences and find out what you're up to, frankly.
Dwight, every budget season, we have some formalities that we go through. One is that the mayor issues a budget memo, which his colleagues promptly disregard, but he at least sets a set of priorities and some suggested formalities. Two is that Andrew and the budget office set out a calendar. So what it sounds to me like is, assuming we get to consensus here and we have a recommendation about this independent body and full-time staff, one of the important first things to do would be to have the staff sit down with Andrew Scott and work into the budget timeline these specific events so they are ingrained in our schedule. And then coordinate that with the mayor and the commissioner in charge so that whatever we're doing, we're building in enough time to formally engage the pub and make it meaningful. It can't be one of these situations where we find out, you know, it's 3 days to go and we haven't had a chance to talk. So I think it literally means institutionalizing this in the calendar.
And we've had some conversations with Andrew about that. And I'll say, I think this kind of structured involvement in the budget and this partnership role in the budget gives you three advantages. One, it will help you recruit better people for the pub. Two, you'll get their independent views all along the way. And three, if you know you have to deal with, you, the city council, have to deal with them at the end of the process, I think it's more likely you'll deal with them along the way as well. Chris has been kind of kicking around some iterations from the current draft before you that I think we want to kind of get on the table, and I want to let you do it, if that's okay, Chris, unless you'd let me to do it. Yeah.
Yeah, so on this particular topic, I can't emphasize enough how important it is that the oversight entity set the baseline. All conversations have to orient to one thing. And so if there's conflicting information, or if there's, I'll say, conflicting budgets, one, say, from you, Commissioner Fish, and one from the oversight entity, all of the comparisons by Mayor Hales and all of you as the city council need to be to the oversight entity.
Sorry, I don't understand what you mean there.
So the idea is that the oversight entity is playing a significant role in the development of the budget. And I think Commissioner Fish will be working towards consensus with that entity as well, and that the budget that he submits will have the blessing of the oversight entity. But to the extent that that doesn't happen, the oversight entity's budgets should be the baseline or the chalk line or however you want to describe that for comparison by the mayor and for you all as the city council in future discussions.
And so to clarify, this is Chris's proposal, which we have just begun to react to. We've heard from one member, but not others, and we'll continue to have it. But we wanted to surface this difference of an approach from what's currently in the draft that Chris has asked us to consider.
Fair enough. So the does that make sense, Commissioner Fritz?
I understand the point. I'll wait till you're done and give you my opinion.
Brilliant. So I guess with that point made, part of the, if you've read the existing draft, there's a little bit of, I think, a lack of sequencing, or there could be an issue with the sequencing. So as it stands now, Commissioner Fish, you would submit your budget to the mayor, and this oversight entity, to the extent it had recommendations, would sort of would submit something to kind of bolt those on. And so it kind of leaves you, Mayor Hales, trying to figure out, okay, well, what am I comparing to? And so again, my personal view is that it should be a comparison to the oversight entity. And there's a delicate balance that we're trying to strike here, and it's been brought up multiple times in terms of how do you integrate the oversight entity in a meaningful way and actually get people to participate. If their view on the budget isn't being taken into account, why would anybody want to participate? And this is manifested in the existing PERB. We don't need to belabor that point.
Chris, you lost me, though, on some point here, because my understanding of the recommendation we've been discussing is that the commissioner in charge, whoever that person is, would be consulting with the pub in the preparation of a budget in the same way that the commissioner in charge now works with the Bureau Advisory Committee in the preparation of a budget. Ultimately, it's the commissioner in charge's responsibility to prepare the budget recommendation. But under the proposal that we've been discussing, there would be a robust level of interaction and engagement with the pub leading up to the commissioner in charge preparing a budget, forwarding it to the mayor. There's a second bite of the apple where the pub has a chance to the extent there's a continuing disagreement about some kind of priority on the capital side or the operating side, to influence the mayor, who after all presents his mark, his budget, which does not have to accept any of the recommendations from the commissioner in charge. And then there's a third episode, as I understand it, a third event, which is once the mayor issues his proposed budget and we get public comment, there's a chance for this body to weigh in again. And as I understand it, there's even a proposal, which I rather like, that goes beyond exchanging written documents. I tell you, I've been in government for 6 years. We're very good at writing things and exchanging comments. It often doesn't lead anywhere. Face-to-face at a work session is actually where some of our best work is done. And what will be different under your proposal is we'll have a face-to-face discussion as a council off of any disagreement over the mayor's proposed. And you'll have professional staff at the table holding our feet to the fire. So that's how I understand this proposal. And I guess I'm a little confused about this concept of transferring the budget-making authority to this body, because I don't know that is something that I could support.
That's fair. Imagine the possibility that the oversight entity in its independent oversight role would maybe not agree with the commissioner in charge. And the question is, how are you dealing with that? The overarching goal, whether it's my view on it or this group's view, I think, please disagree if you disagree, is that we shed light on what for us and for others appears to be a relatively black box process once the budget is released from the bureaus. So to the extent that it's not clear, Mayor, what your changes are, or City Council, what your changes are relative to, that reduces the transparency of your process where we're trying to add transparency to your process.
I have a concern about that suggestion, which is more along the lines of, we're assuming this is these are volunteers, right, on the pub. These are not going to be. And I kind of wonder if it might be a barrier to getting volunteers if you tell them you have to develop and present your own budget. I think that might seem rather daunting to people and somewhat different from learn about the budget and offer your suggestions on specific issues. And I think that the pub could mean, say, here's where we disagree with the commissioner in charge of the budget on specific issues, but I just wonder if it would seem to people like different than a typical sort of volunteer oversight job if you say you were responsible for presenting your own budget. Had you thought about that?
Certainly, and I think the alternative is what you already have in the PERB, and we've seen how effective that hasn't been. So I think we owe it to ourselves to consider
Chris,
an alternative.
What, when this has come up before, kind of speaking from a CUP perspective, I mean, there's a way in which I can be agnostic on this, and something I said at one meeting was, you know what, CUP's not going to trust either group. We're not going to trust the City Council. We're not going to trust some oversight committee, particularly an oversight committee, you know, that has what Chris is suggesting. And I mean, I think there would probably be plenty of times when a budget that came from that group, you know, could conceivably be higher. I mean, I think the assumption is somehow the City Council is always going to be the one who's going to want to do this or do that. I think it could play out any number of different ways. But I think, you know, I think it's fair to say that's not how the current draft is written. This gives us some good input as we finalize it. And I think kind of going back to my initial point is that what makes the PERB that we've included lots of other elements that make the PERB / new old PERB new pub a much more robust group with much more measurable outcomes on your behavior. That's kind of what I keep wanting to come back to.
Oh, God.
If I could. Yeah, I think so. This is a maybe somewhat an issue of semantics, I think. The question, I think, becomes one of how can you retain the visibility of the differences of opinion, and then can the oversight body interject at various points, and that's really what we were trying to accomplish with the proposal. And if they persist in having a different opinion, do they have access to voice that opinion? And I think, as Commissioner Fish pointed out, I think that exists under the existing proposal. it's a lot of work developing a budget, and ultimately it will largely fall to the Bureau. You know, we develop our budget, we present it to an advisory commission, and at the advisory, our budget commission, or budget committee consists of our board plus five lay members of our advisory commission, and we go through the budget and with them, but we don't ask that the commission, our advisory commission develop the budget. It'd be a very, very taxing thing for them to do because there's a lot of minutiae involved. So I think the challenge is finding the right balance. But I appreciate Chris's goal. He fully appreciates the need to retain visibility in this process. But I guess I lean a little bit more towards what we're proposing as, but I'm interested in talking more about it amongst the group. But I think it can do that if approached properly. And if the body, if it feels strongly, it has the opportunity to persist in raising its objection to the proposed budget.
So my understanding of your proposal is, you know, you were given carte blanche with your opportunity to look into what are the possible structures. My understanding is that you're proposing a robust, well-staffed Bureau Advisory Committee that you didn't choose to go to. No, we're going to be in charge of the utilities. Indeed, the voters overwhelmingly said we don't want an independent group in charge of the utilities. We want it to remain within the city government. So there's a couple of things that I think structurally are a huge advantages in this proposal. One, it's a year-round Bureau Advisory Committee. It's not just a budget advisory committee. It's a Bureau Advisory Committee, and that has been needed for a long time. Second of all, it's going to be staffed by experts, and they're going to be housed within the city budget office. And this was a proposal that, as we were considering setting up the city budget office, that was one of my heart's desires, because it was clear to me after some of the issues that I had with the Water Bureau in particular over my first term that that was needed. So by hiring specifically utility experts within the city budget office who are, and remember the city budget office responds to all five members of the council by code. So it will also, now these utility experts will be responding to this new commission. In fact, just going back, calling it a board, I'm not going to argue about the name, but it is a commission, and commissions are really important in Portland, and they're advisory commissions, so it's fine. So, but that's a really key piece to this proposal. So when you've got a robust year-round Bureau Advisory Commission committee, or whatever it is, group, the commissioner in charge has to work with that group, and this is not new to other bureaus. Parks Bureau has the Parks Board and multiple other committees. Office of Neighborhood Involvement has a year-round Bureau Advisory Committee. The commissioner in charge has to work with that group. You can't just stiff arm folks. And in particular, in the budget process, as Jim knows from being a citizen volunteer on the Parks Board and in that budget process, ideally you want your commissioner in charge and your citizen committee to be in lockstep, in partnership. You said it several times, Dwight. This is a new realm for oversight and engagement of community in the Water and Environmental Services bureaus. This is an opportunity to move away from, we're going to disagree, so let's figure out how best to disagree, to we're setting up a structure where we may be able to work together to get to the right point. So, you know, when I'm working with my bureaus, the last thing I want is to disagree with my budget advisory committee, because I'm going to need all of those folks coming into the council, coming into the budget committees, advocating for what I want. So I give some, they give some, we get to something that we can all agree to stand behind. And if we can't, then we can be really transparent. I think the problem in some ways has come in past budget sessions where there have been changes. And in, you know, after the mayor's budget is proposed, there's a lot of discussion one-on-one and trying to figure out what's the best way to divide up a pie that doesn't, there's not enough slices for everybody. And you can't be going back to your community all the time. What I usually have done with my bureaus in the past is say, do you empower me to make the best deal I can, having been at these discussions? And so far, everybody has said yes. And what my responsibility then is to go back to my colleagues, and they now are my colleagues, to say, I got this, I didn't get this, this is what happened with this, and this, everything went to hell in a handbasket, and I'm sorry. You know, that's just the way it is. So that's what I'm hoping we're getting to with this Bureau Advisory Committee that has the CBO's input, and I would suggest that you might want to consider, when you're looking at how the 11 or however many members get appointed, having one appointed by each member of council. Because in the structure that we have that Commissioner Saltzman set up with the Technology Oversight Committee, where we each have our liaison, our appointee, that person tends to become our liaison, that somebody that we go back and forth with, that they explain to us what's going on, give us reports. And so we want the entire council, I think, to be have a vested interest in the success of this new board.
I wanted to add to what Commissioner Fritz was saying in our discussions with the CBO. It's less of a black box because working with the CBO, we'd be alerted or privy to all the budget changes. So I think, and that's a big plus also.
Good. Can you tell me what they are as they go along?
Well, one of the things that I would go back to something, Dwight, you said earlier, which at the beginning, which is, that the recommendation should be tailored to the problem. And I think that's uniquely for this body to consider. In any further work you do, fine-tuning this proposal, considering amendments and alternatives, go back to the fundamental question of what's the problem and how does your solution address that problem? And make sure it's tailored. It has been in the last few years, there's been occasions where the council, for example, came in with a rate proposal that was below what an advisory body recommended. I think we have to be careful about assuming here that there's a natural dynamic. It may be that a truly independent body looks at our books and says, we've been stingy in investing in, that they don't like the idea of 100-year-old pipes on a 400-year replacement schedule, and they want us to reinvest. And the council may be in the position of saying, that's great, but we have to be concerned about impact on ratepayers. So this is what I hope comes out of this is a partnership and a dynamic process with more sunshine. And the professional staff, I think, is an inspired idea because it addresses a problem we've heard from BAC members for time immemorial, which is they feel outmatched by the staff at the Bureau. And by having permanent membership with dedicated staff and a seat at the table, I really think we're doing something unique in terms of leveling the playing field. And then ultimately, as someone said earlier, we won't be judged on what's on paper. We'll be judged on how this process actually works over the next few years. And I for one, based on the outline you've presented to us, am very bullish on how this could positively impact the stewardship of our utilities.
Well, on that note, I know that we need to wrap up, but I want to say I think this discussion has been helpful for us in understanding what you have drafted, and I hope it's been helpful to you. I think it has been in terms of refining, maybe polishing or augmenting what you already have on the table here for the next phase of the process.
Mayor, can I just say it has been tremendously helpful, and I was frankly shocked and taken aback that a cynic criticized this work plan and suggested it undermined our independence. It frankly has done nothing but make this process more comprehensive. And to have the input to present a proposal that didn't reflect a thoughtful insight from you doesn't undermine our independence. It simply augments our comprehensiveness. And I'm shocked by it, but we'll move beyond it. Chris, did you want to say anything else? Or?
Yeah, actually, I just want to echo what Dwight is saying. I'm thankful for the opportunity to serve, and I'm really thankful that we're having this discussion. I think you've had lots of very, very helpful thoughts and questions for us. And though I have full faith in Dwight's ability to twist your arms and get more time, I would personally ask that you give us leave to take the time to consider all of this. We have another public hearing. We will require time to incorporate that. And as others pointed out, Jim pointed out, we've been strained for time. Dwight put it out. We haven't yet fully agreed on the proposal, and there just needs to be more time for commission meetings to accomplish those objectives.
Well, and I'll just interject, sorry, that the mayor is and the commissioner in charge have made clear we'll get the time we need, and we'll take the commitment I've made to Chris is he's got some interesting ideas we want to think about, and we appreciate your input on them. The decision is ours, and we'll what you do with our decision is yours. But the decision is ours, and I've committed to Chris that we'll make sure that we give his the thoughts he's raised adequate airing. It's true for all the other colleagues here, but Chris is the one with the pending issues. And we appreciate the opportunity. I'll say at the outset of this process, Mayor Hales and Commissioner Fish committed to us independence and support. You have delivered on your promise. And we hope to deliver on our promise to provide recommendations for an oversight changes that will improve accountability, transparency, and oversight of the bureaus.
Thank you.
Three things. One, I just want to reiterate what Commissioners Fish and Fritz both said, which is that having independent staff dedicated to the group as opposed to bureau employees is a critical, to me, probably the most critical part of this proposal and much appreciated. And two, I think that you might want to consider the suggestion that Commissioner Fritz inadvertently made a minute ago that you call this the public utility group or the PUG, which at least has appeal to a certain segment of small dog owners.
I actually was thinking, never mind. I'm not going to talk about that.
There's some acronyms clearly don't want. But
you know, if you work in feral cats, you'll actually go to the top of the list. So
I did want to make a couple of suggestions towards the end of the report on the recommended roles and responsibilities. And again, I appreciate all the work that's gone into this, and I very much agree with most of what's in here, which is wanting to suggest some additions. In the role of the first tier of responsibility is really talking about the role as a Bureau Advisory Committee, and I would suggest that under that leadership role, some other bullets to add would be equity in contracts, jobs, and services. Compliance with other citywide policy council adopted policies, such as the model employer for people with disabilities and other citywide policies that the utility bureaus are not exempt from, that they need to be looking at that. And so that is a role for this oversight or this advisory body as well. And then community engagement in everything that water and environmental services do are an area that I would like to see this commission addressing. And then under the reporting and monitoring roles, I would add monitoring compliance with federal and state mandates such as the Endangered Species Act, the Clean Water Act, the Superfund, Americans with Disabilities Act, LT2, Bull Run Watershed Protections. Those are all things that the bureaus certainly have to pay attention to. And so I would hope that the commission would also be making sure that even as we work on the budget and oversight of bureau processes, that those bureaus have to stay in compliance with those mandates, and that needs to be part of their work plan to get regular updates on how the bureau is complying with those mandates.
Thank you. Dan, I think you had some comments.
Well, I just wanted to thank the committee. I guess I'm still, with all due respect, I'm not convinced that this is nothing but sort of, you know, at one time somebody invented the idea of a PERB, somebody invented the idea of a budget advisory committee, and they thought those were the best, greatest things in autonomy and independent decision making. So I'm not sure, I keep asking myself, what's the biggest game changer in your recommendations? And I guess I come down to thinking, well, it's maybe the independent staff, but then I'm not sure how independent the staff really are, because even though in theory the budget office is accountable to all five of us, I don't think that theory will hold up muster if a mayor really wants somebody gone, or a commissioner charged wants somebody gone from the city budget office. You know, it just hasn't been tested yet. And so I'm just not sure. And I guess I would ask, did you consider at all placing the independent staff in the auditor's office, which can much better stand up to the face of political pressures that could emanate from some sort of a meltdown somewhere? So I'm sitting here, you know, I respect a lot of the work you've put into this, but I also heard you at the outset say that you were told not to consider charter changes, and that's news to me, frankly. I didn't know that. That, to me, that, you know, pretty much put some bounds on the scope and where you can go with your recommendations. So, like I said, I appreciate the work you've done. I'm not sure I can answer the question, what makes this more different than what makes this the best new thing around. Maybe you'll come back and be able to persuade me after you've had your last public go-around and do your final iteration. But I would encourage you to think about some of the things, the fail-safe tests that you need to apply to this model to make sure it truly is fail-safe.
Well, I would just say that I think one of the things that the built-in review is in part intended to find out whether or not we got it right or not, so that you have an established step to do so, so that if it turns out to be another perb, you can go fix it. But I feel confident that the independent staff, coupled with the more structured engagement in the project process and broader scope to include not just the putting the